Bandwidth for this podcast is brought to you by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com. This is the iOS Show, episode 260, recorded on June 29th, 2015. Enjoy! All right, it's time for the iOS Show, where we cover all things iOS and beyond. I am Michael Johnston, and with me, as usual, is Adam Christensen from the MacCast. Hey, Adam, how you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm well.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Just us.
It is just us. Yef is, he's not here. He's with a baby?
Off with. I thought he was with small versions of humans.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's okay to call that a baby.
It is.
I think that's what those are.
Tiny human.
Yeah, tiny humans. He's with some tiny humans right now, so it's just us. And, of course, we're sponsored this week by NatureBox, and they ship delicious, tasty, guilt-free snacks right to your door with over 100 snacks to choose from, like mini Belgian waffles, strawberry lemonade, fruit stars, and the sweet and salty nut medley. You'll never get bored with snacking again. Try NatureBox for free by going to naturebox.com/TIOSS and enjoy some snacks. We'll get to them later on in the show. First thing to talk about is Apple Music.
Yeah, we're too early.
We're too early?
By about 12, 13 hours, right?
Yeah. Oh, well, let's put a pin in that because I forgot to mention that today is the iPhone's like 6th birthday or whatever.
Yeah.
It's the iPhone's birthday today.
I saw a cool, somebody, it might have been 9 to 5 Mac or somebody did a cool like animated morphing GIF thing. GIF. I call them GIFs. Do you call them GIFs or GIFs?
Yeah, GIFs, whatever.
GIF. It's not peanut butter for gosh sake.
It's not peanut butter, no. 8 years ago today, the iPhone came out. June 29th, 2007. I was in Rockford outside the AT&T store with Ed Kirk, and we camped in a tent. And Rick Nielsen showed up of Cheap Trick, and and he had Ed stand in line for him because
cool.
he didn't want to hang out there.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
I have that phone in my hand right now.
Sweet. I wish I had mine.
Yep.
Yeah. It was
battery's
stolen.
Dead. I need to charge it.
Well, it's not your daily driver, is it?
Nope.
Yeah. So
the trick will be finding a 30-pin connector.
Oh, come on. You have a few of those laying around.
Somewhere.
In your big box of cables. So Apple Music, Apple has decided to pay royalties during the free trial period. And it appears, I don't think that it's true, but it certainly outwardly appears as though Taylor Swift bullied them into doing it.
Yeah. You know what's funny is not long after that story broke, there started to be some speculation that it was a PR thing. I kind of thought that might be the case from the beginning.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
How so?
All the conspiracy theorists.
Oh, yeah.
Just with how it played out, you know.
Well, in
but
what, in
I don't
what
think
way?
Apple really likes that kind of negative publicity.
Well,
so
yeah,
I doubt that that's what went on. But I did.
Seem like
I did
what they
think
would
about it. I thought, hey, if I were going to stage a like PR thing for Taylor Swift and Apple, this would be an interesting way to go about it because it was all that was in the press like the beginning of last week.
Oh, right, because now
the tech press,
her album is exclusively on going to be on Beats, is that correct?
Not exclusive.
Okay.
From what I read. But
it's going to be
limited places it's going to be available, yeah.
Yeah.
And Apple Music will be one of them.
Yes.
So it's kind of a big deal.
Yeah. So, but I mean, good news all around. I think it's good that Apple is paying out royalties. I guess it's going to be, it's significantly less than what they are going to pay out when paying customers.
Correct.
Stream music. Some percentage?
It's basically, I mean, and they don't like, Spotify doesn't like it that this is sort of the way things are measured, but it's like, you know, how much the average per stream. And I think it's something around 2 cents.
No. For the free trial?
For the free trial, two cents a stream.
No, it's 0.2 of a cent.
Oh, sorry, 2 tenths. Yes, sorry, 2 cents. 2 tenths of a cent.
There
per
you
stream.
Go. There you go. Yeah.
Where typically during the pay period, it'll be about 6 tenths to 8 tenths of a cent per stream. So it's about a quarter to a third of what they'll be getting from paid streams.
Yeah, I think it's about.
I do this all the time. Sorry about the numbers, but it freaks me out all the time because I even messed it up on my show because I thought it was like 6 thousandths of a cent. But it's six.
You well, went it's six, way too far in the other way.
Well, because what they do is they do it of a dollar. So it's like 6 thousandths of a dollar, which is, I think, like 6 tenths of a cent.
Oh, I see. Yeah, yeah.
And I get thrown off because it's like $0.006 to $0.00084 per stream. Why they do that? Why they can't just frickin' say it's
0.2 cents.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess so. This is kind of based off of the speculation came from comparing to what Spotify does, which is they do 0.14 of a cent during the free trial period, which is about 71.5% of the revenue that they would typically put out. So I'm sorry.
So
in the end, let's just say it's a third because Apple's a little bit higher than that. So they're going to be paying out what 0.6 of a cent
but
in the end.
And I don't know how it's really structured on the back end because the weird thing is there is no revenue to split during the free trial period.
Sure. Yeah. And so they're
right because unlike Spotify, their free trial is subsidized by ads. Well, Apple will not have ads. So,
and Apple's just paying out of pocket, but that makes perfect sense because Apple can do that.
But based on what, like what arbitrary number, because typically the way it works is what happens is you take the total monthly revenue from the service that month. And then you multiply that by, the total number, the artist streams divided by the total number of streams. So you look at that artist and how many streams did they get in that month. You divide that by the total streams for the entire service. And then the payout is based on that number. So like 70 to 71.5% or whatever goes to the publishing owner. Or in this case, with the free trial period, it's obviously less than that, about a third of that, like you said. And then that's sort of what gets paid out to the publishing owners. And then from there, the artist, depending on what the artist's royalty agreement with the publishing owners is, that determines the actual artist payout. Does that make sense?
Sure.
So, I mean, that's typically how it's calculated. Those are how the royalties are calculated. But Apple doesn't have that initial number. They don't have that the very first number, which is total monthly revenue from the service for the first 90 days is zero.
I think they're just gonna fudge some numbers.
Exactly. So, but I mean, they could arbitrarily say, oh, we think we would have made X.
Yeah.
Like, that's the weird part of this deal is like, who determines what that number is? What the beginning starting number is?
I don't know.
Yeah.
Okay.
So actually how much they make is going to be determined by that starting number. And I guess I don't know where the two tenths of a cent per stream came from. If that came from the deal that Apple set up, and maybe that was just the arbitrary number that Apple agreed on. They just said, okay, we're going to give you, you know, because typically if a service like Spotify is making revenue, you're getting 0.14. We'll do a little bit better. We'll give you 0.2. And Apple's just going to use that as the hard number to start with. That's not clear. I don't know if that's really the case or if this is just people doing creative math and thinking that that's about what Apple's going to pay. It's really not clear. I don't understand
sure.
how that number.
I mean,
exists.
Honestly, at the end of the day, we'll probably get some numbers and we can not speculate on stuff that really hardly matters to us at all.
Well, and here's the other thing. The one thing I want to comment on with all of these numbers, and I can't remember if I mentioned it last week or not. But I want people to really understand because there's a lot of bad reporting, in my opinion, on this. is a lot of times you'll hear that the artist is getting 0.2 cents per stream or 0.6 to 0.8 cents per stream. That is typically inaccurate because it really depends on that money goes to the publishing rights owners. And some artists own their publishing rights and some don't. A lot of them, it's the label. And then they have a agreement with the label for a certain amount. So, like, I think somebody had told me Taylor Swift does own all of her publishing rights. So, like, that money would be going to her. And then she has a separate deal with the labels for maybe they pay them straight out. Or I don't know how that works. Or maybe that she owns part of the company that owns the publishing rights. I don't know. It gets weird. But every deal is different. So if you read a report, all I want to say is if you read a report that says the artist is getting that full amount, typically they aren't. In some cases they are, but in most cases they're probably not getting that that amount even. So, but I mean, at the end of the day, this whole thing blew up, right? And the thing is what you need to understand, and I think Brian Chaffin over at Mac Observer just wrote up a piece about this because we talked about this a bit. And the thing is this is like any other industry, and there seems to be a lot of whining and complaining coming from all sides.
No, never.
Yeah. But the deal, I mean, and what everybody's whining and complaining about is really the fact that the payout scheme has, you know, how you make money has totally shifted. And the reality is that music is ultimately now in some ways, you know, not as valuable as it used to be.
Yeah.
And even that's a misstatement because it really just depends on how you work your deals and how you're working. What is happening, though, is this is the new way that you will sell music. So if you are a musician, you're going to have to go into this system, and this is the system, you know. And I like to draw some parallels to just even say, like, software developers. I mean, software developers went through this, right? The television industry and movie industry has gone through. Everybody is going through this transition from the old way of selling media to kind of these new ways of selling media and software and services and stuff like that. And they have to figure out how to work in the new payout system. And this is the new payout system. So it's sort of like you got to just suck it up and deal with it. And the people that don't and are just going to fight it, well, they're going to have a much harder time than the people who accept it and learn to work within the system and make it work for them. Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's move on.
You want to move on?
No, I'm totally content listening to this or talking about this. But no, it's good detail. It's good information.
I mean, you get what I mean about software, though, right? You know,
yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
You could write your software and sell it for $40-$50, right, in a box with a manual and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And now you might have to sell it for $5.99.
Okay, let me throw this out there. They're in the last couple of weeks, so Instacast, Vimedio, mm-hmm. the company that makes Instacast, they just went out of business.
Yep. Yeah, and they were doing the bit, they were trying to work within the new system, and it didn't work out for them because they were doing subscription based, right? You had to pay monthly.
No, not at all. I think it was a no.
No. They had moved to that system. You may have been grandfathered in.
Are you sure?
Yeah, their new system was an in-app purchase month to month. You paid for the software.
No kidding. Yeah. Are you sure? Because I remember paying like $5 or whatever.
Yep, and they had moved away from that because they felt they weren't making enough money, and they moved into a rent your software model sort of system.
Oh,
from what I understand.
Okay.
From all the reporting.
Yeah,
it
was $5 back in 2013. I'm checking it out on Appler. And then it went down at the end of 2013 to $4, then to $3, then to $2, then to $1, then to free.
Yeah, and under the free system, I think there was limited functionality, and sort of you wanted other stuff you paid, but it was a subscription that you bought into.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you got for your subscription. I'm sure you got some online, you know, like cloud features.
Yeah. Oh yeah. 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 Well, okay. So then, I would imagine they changed their model, in order to attempt to make more money because they weren't making enough money. Right. And they went out of business, and they were one of my favorite podcast clients. I'd still use it.
And that's a hard, that's a hard category to be in to do that as well, especially when you've got,
you're competing directly with Apple. Yeah, that is a bummer. Hey, but you know, I don't know if you remember Circa News. Mm-hmm. I had been using Circa News quite a bit, and they went out of business too. They couldn't do it. They weren't making enough money. Although I don't really remember how they were making money. I don't think I paid for it. Maybe I did.
Well,
I don't recall.
This is
the new model. It stinks.
The new app order is what I called it.
Yeah, it's terrible.
Ago. It's very hard for developers, but there's also developers that have been highly successful with the new model.
The music industry is going to go through the same thing.
And frankly, I think what's going to happen is the big loser, and I don't know that I am going to shed any tears for this, I think the big loser in the new music model is going to be the labels, because I think more and more artists are going to just realize, why do we need these guys?
Yeah,
I can do a deal straight with Apple and get the 70% of, you know, the paid subscriptions. Yep. Why am I only getting, you know, 20% of the 70% or 50% of the 70%, whatever the deal is that they cut with the label?
Yeah.
So I don't know. I'm saying that as a total outsider. I don't know if that's really true of the music industry, but it seems that way. And it seems like book publishers are the same way. It's sort of, if I'm going to do my thing, why wouldn't I just self-publish an ebook and get it on Amazon and iBooks and keep more of the money?
Well, because it's hard, though. I mean, in a lot of ways, having a label, not necessarily one of the big labels, but having someone to go to who has the connections for doing the actual production of the audio, figuring out the album artwork and all the stuff in between, publicizing, all of that stuff. I mean, that's why you have indie record labels, right? Because it's still a necessary.
That's the bigger news this week.
That's why it's a necessary thing.
Music, right? Do we have that in the notes? You know, that also the doing this paid thing enabled them. It looks like it enabled them to sign on to the bigger indie music publishers.
Yes. Yeah, it did. Yeah. And that made the indie publishers happy. And it's a very good thing, because I think, based on this discussion, it seems like the indie publishing is going to be where it's at, because more and more people are going to be moving away from the big record labels that just take all their money and moving to something that makes a little more sense financially.
Well, too, I mean, because if you look at Warner Brothers and Sony Music, and I mean, if you start to ask people, you know, what artists from those labels do you know, it's just going to be those top tier artists that really don't need help necessarily with, I mean, like Taylor Swift is never going to have a problem putting out a new album and people knowing about it.
Yeah, at least for a while anyway.
Or, you know, so it's the smaller guys that, you know, need the help. But I mean, I think even there, having a big name, you know, company necessarily doesn't help you, because again, you're still a small fish within their big pond, and sort of like, are you really going to get that much attention from them? So you're better off taking your own destiny in your hands and grassrooting it and, you know, leveraging your fans through social media and those sorts of things. So what I'm most interested about with Apple Music, and granted they haven't had a good track record of this, is seeing how many artists sort of, you know, jump in on the Connect thing. I think that could be a huge thing, especially for indie artists, if Apple has built it well enough on the back end for them to use, and it's a tool they want to and will, you know, use actively.
Yeah, something that'll push relevant information.
Well, something where they can connect with their fans.
Yeah.
You know, and there's certainly a lot of potential there. Yeah, there is a lot of potential marketing-wise and additional revenue stream-wise, because if people can discover these indie artists on Apple Music and then you go and they're on the artist page, he's publishing, you know, in-studio stuff that he's working on and all kinds of cool, like, scribbled out lyrics and this is the next project I'm working on, and oh, by the way, you know, I'm coming to this town next and I'll be doing a show at this little club, you should totally come out. You know, if you can start to feel like you really are connecting with that artist, then, you know, they're making more money from their shows and their merchandise and all of that sort of stuff if they can start to expand their fan base. So if the discovery is good enough on Apple Music with radio and some of the other things that they're doing, and it can push people into that Connect stream, and the artist is actually using that. That's going to be the key, though, is that Apple really should be working on incentivizing artists to totally post everything they can to the Connect service. Yeah. And Apple hasn't had a good history or track record of doing that. And those tools need to be, like, super solid.
Well, I think more importantly, they need to keep the signal-to-noise ratio in check as well. I mean, it can't be just constantly bombarding me with crap.
No, but if it's an artist that you care about, and I think ratio.
Who's to say which artist I care about? How does it know?
You do.
How do I tell it?
You're going to follow artists through Apple Music.
So I'm probably not going to follow anybody.
Really?
I mean, I might. It just seems like more of a thing to do. I guess we'll have to see how it works when it comes out. And it's probably going to come out tomorrow. All signs point to tomorrow. It was announced, right, that it's June 30th?
Yes.
So we're going to get to the first Beats Radio one
stuff tomorrow.
Is dropping the first broadcast tomorrow. We're getting iOS 8.4.
OS 10, 10.10.4.
Okay.
I would assume an update to iTunes.
Probably.
Yeah.
So. And
Apple Music.
Yeah, Apple Music.
And probably a watch update as well, I would think.
Maybe.
Because Apple Music works with the watch.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay, cool. And speaking of updates, it's kind of weird, but maybe it'll work out. iOS 8.3 has an untethered jailbreak.
Woohoo!
Finally. So for those of you who want to or have gotten an Apple Watch and you've been itching to jailbreak, now you can. I would say there's a good chance. No, these days there's really not. Well, now that I'm thinking about it, I may jailbreak because there's, what do you call it? Flux. Flux is pretty much the only thing that I desire these days on my phone.
What is Flux again? Remind me.
It changes the temperature, the color temperature of your display. As the sun goes down, it becomes warmer so that it doesn't hurt your eyeballs.
They have Flux for iOS?
Yes. They've had it for many years. Yeah. It's great. It works just as well as the one on the Mac. I would say there's a good chance that the jailbreak that just came out from Taigi, I think it's probably Taigi, that will probably work on iOS 8.4. It doesn't seem like there was enough time for Apple to patch it. But
the T-A-I-G?
T-A-I, capital G. So I think it's Taigi. But that came out on the 23rd. So perhaps there was enough time for Apple to figure it out. But, I mean, maybe they probably didn't have a lot of time. So I'd say it's up in the air at this point. I think it's odd that they didn't just wait for 8.4.
Yeah, that is weird because I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to dump the jailbreak so that they can get Apple Music.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it would kind of suck. Like, yeah, I got my untethered jailbreak. Oh, Apple Music came out. I can't install it.
Yeah. You know, I think at this point, I will probably update to iOS 8.4. And if I can, yeah. And if I can jailbreak, then I'll do that on 8.4. Otherwise, I do want to get the Apple Music. I'm pretty excited to try that out. So
everybody I'm talking to is.
It seems like they've got some good stuff going on. So
it's going to be huge.
Yeah.
I just hope it's good.
I think it will be. I think it will be.
I have high hopes too. I feel good about it. You know, I don't know. It depends on how close it was. It ends up being to Beats though. I like the onboarding process of Beats. The overall Beats experience, I wasn't totally thrilled.
Well, they've got the magic Apple UI guys who will improve that stuff.
So, I don't know. I mean, you ran Beats for a while, right?
Very briefly.
Yeah.
I think the getting to music part was kind of a hassle.
Exactly. Yeah. So hopefully that's all cleaned up.
Yeah. Okay. Apple Care Plus for iPhone, iPad, iPod, Apple Watch now covers batteries that retain less than 80% of their original capacity, which I thought...
This is not a new thing.
I thought it wasn't a new thing, but I guess the official policy was 50% or less. So now they've improved it. Okay. And the only bummer is I think it's people who purchased the AppleCare Plus on April 10th of this year or later.
Okay.
So
have you ever had to take a device back for battery?
No. Well,
me neither. I know it happens. I'm not trying to discount it, but I'm just
I did. My MacBook, okay. My MacBook Pro, my 17-inch MacBook Pro. And, but that, I mean, in that case, that was a 3-year warranty, right? And right. So the, I think it, maybe the policy was 80% on that, on Macs.
I really thought it was this. Yeah, maybe. Maybe it was only 80%.
I had an 80% right. number in my head.
Yeah.
So
I think you're right. I think that was the situation. On Mac.
Yeah. So
I just had always assumed it would be the same on iOS, but.
Yeah, I guess it's not. So, but now it is. So there you go. So good news for those who just got a device. I guess
for
that's
iDevices, I guess.
What is the, when did we get our watches? When did that come out? April 11th,
wasn't it?
Yeah. So.
Or 24th, April.
There we go.
They went 24th. On sale April 11th. They came out April 20th.
So I'd say that.
Isn't that right? That's right. Right.
Sure.
Yes.
24th. Yeah. So yeah, it'll cover your watch at the very least. Or
they went on
watch.
Sale April 10th.
Yeah. Okay.
Came out on April 24th.
Yep. So there you go. Okay. So we have more to talk about, but we're talking about NatureBox first. Because they're our sponsor and they're great. And, you know, everyone loves to snack. And when you do snack, it should definitely be worth it. You don't want to just, hey, I'm kind of hungry. I want something to nibble on. You reach for the nearest thing and it's not like satisfying. And
Twinkies.
Yeah.
Just tons of Twinkies. Just.
Do you have Twinkies?
No.
Yeah. You don't want that. You don't want that kind of thing.
You do not want Twinkies. You want
gross calories. It doesn't taste good.
Good, healthy stuff.
Yeah. You don't want, I like that. You don't want Twinkies. You want NatureBox.
Yeah.
Because it's tasty, it's satisfying, and it's not full of a bunch of junk. It's full of good stuff. I always like to say that it's the kind of stuff that your grandma would make for you. Except if she had like all the time in the world and was just constantly making and thinking up new awesome snacks, because this stuff is.
My grandma only used high fructose corn syrup.
Oh, she did?
No.
Yeah, well, they don't have any high fructose corn syrup. They don't have artificial flavors, no artificial colors or sweeteners, no trans fats, and of course, no high fructose corn syrup. It's all the good stuff.
Sugar.
All the good stuff. And they have over 100 healthy and crave-worthy options. And they're delivered right to your door. They actually have some neat filters on there to find exactly what you want. So if you want something sweet or savory, you know, you can filter on flavor, but you can also filter on dietary restrictions. So if you want something that's vegetarian, you don't want any of their meat products, you can do that, or vegan even. They have a lot of different ways to quickly find what you want. And you can even just say, hey, you know, give me something that looks good. They'll shuffle something up for you and send some good snacks without you even having to look through it. And then you can figure out what you like and then request it. And of course, I like the nom noms, as we've mentioned before. They've got the mini Belgian waffles and the strawberry lemonade fruit stars. I just got the Big Island pineapple, which is really cool. Anytime I find dried pineapple in the store, it's for whatever reason, I don't know why, they add like a buttload of sugar on top right. of pineapple. Why? It's already sugary.
Ooh, they have all of Tapenade.
Yeah.
Tapenade.
What's that?
It's like a dip that's sort of made from black olives.
Oh, interesting.
I think. Let's see if they're using black. Yeah, they're doing a mixture of green and black olives with
okay,
lemon juice.
Cool. But yeah, the Big Island pineapple, no sugar added. It's just dried pineapple and it's delicious. And I also like the sweet blueberry almonds. I got the lemon tea biscuits. Those are really good. They got the dark chocolate pretzel pops, toasted cheddar sticks, peanut butter nom noms, of course. Tons of stuff. Check them out.
You go to Michael's house, it's all peanut butter nom noms.
My house is just made out of nom noms these days. That's how I'm holding things together. It's how I mount the pictures on the wall. It's nom noms. I'm mounting photos of nom noms with the nom noms. So
cool.
It works out. So yeah, go to naturebox.com/TIOSS, naturebox.com/TIOSS, and you're going to get a free box of snacks. That's all you have to do. Just go there, give them your info, and you get snacks. And then they're not even going to like be nasty about hooking you and making you buy more snacks afterwards. If you don't like it, you can just cancel. But you probably won't cancel because they're delicious, and I like them. I pay for it. So yeah, naturebox.com/TIOSS. Next gen iPhone stuff. Apple is going to eliminate the home button. Do we talk about this every year? I think.
I think actually it's something that they're exploring for sure.
They're probably exploring it. DigiTimes is the one who brings this insightful information because of the. They say, hey, you know, we're going to get the Force Touch.
Yep.
With haptic feedback.
Yep.
Be nice to eliminate that bezel.
But, yeah,
but at the same time, you've got all that space up at the top. You want to have equal. You want to have a symmetrical amount of negative space.
Maybe not.
Top and the bottom. I think so. If you're Johnny Ive, you certainly do.
Well, I mean, they had that. We were talking about this, and you know, they had that patent on technology that would make the actual whole screen act as a video camera.
Yeah, there would be that. But what about the earpiece?
I don't know. You mean maybe move it? I mean, you could maybe move it higher up, or
but then that wouldn't be ergonomically.
Does it need
nice.
To be right? I guess it needs to kind of be right there.
You need something. You don't want to be like jamming a knife in your ear.
Yeah, no. I mean, could it be on the side? No, I guess you got to hold it to your ear. So
I'm sure there are a lot of things that can be done, but I think I personally don't want the home button to go away because a hardware button. Is really nice. If you have a, you know, your phone's hung up, you want to force reboot it.
That's just the thing, right? You know, you need a couple buttons.
you need at least one.
Well, and also for, you know, visually impaired people, it can help you orient the phone, right?
Yeah. I mean, in many ways, having as few buttons as necessary is great, but still having those few necessary buttons is really good, right? So you've got the volume rocker that those have kind of stood the test of time. It makes perfect sense to have it. They've got the physical switch. I hope to God they don't get rid of that ring silent switch. I don't think they will, but that
the on off button, yeah,
on off button, of course,
or sleep wake button, whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, so I think they need to keep it. That's my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I get the idea because in software you can do more stuff with it. You could potentially, you know, open up the interface, you get a bigger screen.
Yeah, but you talk to a lot of the people, well, and then you're expanding the screen again, but you talk to a lot of the people who have Android devices that have the software home button, and that's not nearly as reliable. I mean, I like having a physical button.
I'm totally with you. I hope they never get rid of it. I fear that they may. I guess it's not going to happen with the 6S. I guarantee that. 7, maybe. So we get at least one more round of home button. I'll guarantee it.
Yeah.
Actually, I better not guarantee it. I believe that.
I don't think it's going to happen in the 6S. If anything, it'll be the 7. And yeah. And they're going to have to put the camera behind the screen. And, you know, what happens then? Are they going to grow the screen bigger than, or are they going to actually shrink the phone? I don't think they'll shrink the phone.
This sounds like a bad idea. I think they're messing with it, trying to see, you know, what's possible and if it's even viable. And I hope they come to the conclusion that, you know, there's nothing wrong with one physical button.
Yeah, come on. There's nothing wrong with one button. We still have the mice that have buttons, right?
Yeah, I mean, somebody did point out it is a cost for Apple because they do wear out and break and they have to replace broken ones and stuff like that. So.
Well, okay, here's a much better solution to that. And I would just like to point out that in addition to just having the force feedback and having a force touch button, you also need to have some sort of metal ring for Touch ID to work. In addition to the actual sensing, the little camera in the Touch ID.
No.
Yes, you do.
No.
Yeah.
No. No, Apple bought a company. The part of what's predicating this story is Apple bought a company just this week, or it came out that they bought a company this week that who has technology for putting fingerprint sensing in an LCD. so it's in the layers of the LCD.
Yeah, sure, but they could have done the Touch ID without the metal ring.
It's like Previs or something like that is the name.
I think they prefer the metal ring because it actually senses that a finger is there capacitively, and they also have the grab gesture.
Yep.
Double tap the home button, which is nice. Gosh, where was I going with this now? Oh, why couldn't they just have a force touch home button as they do with the trackpads now? Then they would not have the issue of the mechanical button that wears out. That seems way more likely. It seems like they're moving to that. They seem to like the old force touch.
Of course, now I can't. And sorry, I said they bought the company. They didn't buy the company. And I realized right after I said that I was wrong. Prevaris is the name of the company, and they bought rights to their patents related to this fingerprint sensing from behind an LCD or embedded in an LCD.
iPhone 8. It'll be in that one.
So, and according to Mac Rumors, the company had shut down about 5 years ago, so they just kind of have a patent portfolio they've been selling, and apparently Apple bought the rights to the patents for this technology.
Sure.
Which
it was
sort of
cheap.
Prompted and further pushed along the story that Apple's getting rid of the home button.
Yeah, not happening. Okay, moving on. iOS 9 beta. Apple has seeded the second iOS 9 beta, in addition to the second Apple Watch beta, which, yep. Again, I would like to say, don't put the beta on your watch, people.
Well, if you put the beta on your watch, you got to put the beta on your phone.
Well, you have to put the beta on your phone, which can be rolled back. But once you put the beta on your watch, it's on there. That is an iOS 9 watch, or a watchOS 2 watch, I should say.
Well, it would be an iOS 9 watch, too, because I would imagine that
it does
not roll back your iPhone to 8.4 or 8.3 and then still use it with watchOS 2.
That is very correct. You are correct, sir.
So you are stuck with iOS 9 if you update your watch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You got it. What else have we here? Oh, this is really cool. iOS 9 has a new auto app delete and reinstall feature for OS updates. And
yep.
I'm disassembling my mic as I speak for some reason. It just, everything flew apart. Yeah, so this thing is really cool. It when you go to do your over-the-air update, if you don't have enough space, of course, it will say, hey, you need more space. We can't do it. Sorry. And then it's done. But with iOS 9, it will actually say, hey, we can trash some apps for you, some giant apps. And then after...
does it do with the app data?
I'm not clear on that. I would imagine with a feature like this, they just keep the app data.
But wouldn't that be where most of the storage is? I mean, most of the apps that I have
that use up
a ton of storage, it's the app data. So it's like, you know, all the downloads from Pocket, all the offline data from Pocket, or all the offline data from...
I think that it's... Well, and for me, the apps that are taking up a lot of data are like the TomTom app or other apps that have a lot of content,
right,
or a large size.
Right. So when you delete an app, it also deletes its data.
Right. No, I'm not talking about the user data. I'm talking about the data, the assets along with the app.
Oh.
The app assets.
Interesting.
The stuff that... I would say any stuff that goes along into the backup... When you back up to your computer or to iCloud, I would imagine that is what
does user data
preserved.
Not get backed up?
That's what I'm saying. User data.
Right. So if it deletes my app with my user data,
it doesn't
make a backup of it.
It doesn't delete the user data. That's what I'm saying. It leaves it an old husk of an application with just the user data, and then the app gets reinstalled. I don't know that for sure. But I would imagine that's how they do it.
So I won't lose my game saves. They'll just delete my game with all its 2 gigs of assets.
Yeah. So then you have to re-download afterward.
Well, and it will do that automatically, right? It just
It'll ask you if you want to do it. yes, no, and then it'll do it. And of course, iOS 9 does more for those updates anyway.
Yeah, it's a smaller update.
Smaller updates,
knows and they what do kind of device you have, and it only brings down the stuff you need for your device and right. not every device.
And they stream updates to your device without having to first download and unpack them. So lots of cool stuff.
So if you have a smaller iPhone or iPad this time around, you should have an easier, much easier time upgrading over there.
Yeah. Do they still sell iPod Touches? Do you think anybody yes. still buys those? iPods yes. Touch? I don't know. It's just, I never see those anymore. They're all iPhones.
Yeah. Well, it's under the music tab now in...
Well, I'm not saying I don't see it on Apple. The website. I know.
Well, I mean, they took down the iPod tab.
Yeah, I know that. You know, they still have the Nano and the Shuffle. I guess there are people who buy those still.
Wait a minute. I just said that. Oh, that's interesting. So on the My Apple ID site, they still have an iPod section.
Huh.
They haven't updated that part of the site yet.
That's
fun. I got confused because I started to type in and you know how to autofills. I guess I was on my Apple ID last and so it went straight there and they still have an iPod tab there.
Huh. I guess there are some. Let's see. There are tweaks such as the podcast icon has been updated. They renamed the Apple Watch app to just Watch.
Watch what?
Waka waka.
Yes. You know somebody's going to be going in there like, where are my movies?
I hope not.
Nope. My TV shows aren't here. Yeah, curse you, Apple.
And I guess you can toggle the news app on and off. There's a toggle for the news app. The news app that they are going to be adding.
That was always in there.
Was
I
it?
Think, right?
No, that was for iCloud.
Huh?
It was for the iCloud app.
Oh, so they added like similar functionality for the news app.
Correct.
I hope they do that for all of the built-in apps.
Not going to happen. Not going to do it.
Why not?
Because they don't want to.
They should.
Especially for the Watch app. That's free advertising, Adam.
No, but like Stocks and Compass and Apple Weather.
No, it just goes into the Siberia folder.
Yeah, let's not have to have the Siberia folder anymore.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying uninstall it, right? It'd be even better if they let you uninstall the dang thing, but at least let me hide it.
Yeah.
I think we already had this conversation.
I think we might have had this conversation before, yeah.
Okay.
So there is an iOS 9, there's a policy change with iOS 9 that prevents advertisers from seeing installed apps, according to... Business Insider.
Good.
That Apple will no longer allow advertisers to access app download data for ad targeting purposes, meaning companies will not be able to see all of the apps that are downloaded on a user's device. Currently, Twitter and Facebook do that. Other applications as well. I don't know. So there's Ken Open URL. I don't know if it will be... available for other things other than
I would imagine to probe still.
Yeah, you can probe. I mean, other than saying, hey, can I open this in Chrome?
Right. Yeah. So I think one app can kind of, what that relates to is the thing we talked about, the hacking last month, right? An app can register a like URL that it can respond to.
Right.
I believe can open in just, is basically saying, hey, it does, you know, Yelp:// exist as an endpoint? Like, if I gave you this URL, could you open it in Yelp? But I could be wrong on that. I thought I had read somewhere it was something like that. Even if it isn't, I think it's still a thing that says, you know, here's a file type. Can I open it in GoodReader? Right? I don't know. So I would assume there's some hack rounds.
I think they're probably just going to allow it for people who aren't doing advertising.
I don't I don't necessarily think this was just about advertising.
I think
just,
it is.
They're shutting it down because...
No, they're not shutting it down. It's necessary for certain features. And I think that, well, I mean, from the article that I'm looking at, it's regarding specifically ads. So let me see here. Where was that?
But I think there was a way, like something like Facebook could just, in one sort of command, get a full list of all the apps that were on your device.
Yeah.
And they were then using that to build targeted advertising because they would know, okay, you're an Evernote user. You know, so they could say, we know these devices have Evernote installed on them, so we can tailor ads to that person because we know Evernote people are a certain type of person and they do certain types of things.
Yeah.
So when you would open a Facebook, they could sell ads and they could tell an advertiser, hey, we can make sure that only people who use Evernote on iOS devices are seeing these ads. So they could better target and tailor their impressions.
Yeah. And as far as I know, it's still something where you have to know the URL of the app that you're looking for. It's a probing thing. It doesn't just give you a list of all the apps installed. It's something where you have to know Evernote's URL.
Oh, I thought that was the change.
No, I'm pretty sure it still works that way. But yeah. Apple Watch, watchOS 2, Beta 2 has also been seeded. I think we mentioned that already.
Yeah.
They pulled it temporarily.
Ahead of ourselves.
And then there's the beta 2 is just, it's out now. So I guess if you're stuck on beta on watchOS 2, it's the best way to go. Although I've heard a lot of stories of people being able to go into the Apple store and say, hey, downgrade me. And then they take it for a couple days. And you get your watch back.
Downgrade me. I was an idiot and I installed the beta. Don't want this.
Well, you can just say that you were a registered developer. And then you produce your credentials.
And I was just walking along and boop, oh, the beta installed.
I slipped and fell in this beta.
Now I can't get it off.
I can't get this out. How do I get it out? Yeah. Hey, I bought a cable, a spare watch cable at the Apple store. The $30 version, it's a 1 meter cable. I'm thinking it's a little bit too short. But I didn't want to pay an extra $10 for another meter of cable.
Yeah. Well, don't buy the knockoff ones.
Why is that? They don't work?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I saw a report today that knockoff ones are starting to show up. It's just generally not a good idea with your Apple products. I mean, a lot of the incidents of when we hear, hey, my iPhone caught fire, or, you know, it's people not using MFI certified, you know, Apple legit stuff.
Yeah, does Monoprice make them yet?
No, I don't think anybody makes an Apple watch charging cable except Apple at this point, as far as I know.
Yeah, I'm not seeing anything on.
But apparently some knockoffs are showing up, Chinese knockoffs and stuff are showing up online, and
of course
people
are
buying them. And the thing is, I've read too that Apple is actually using one of the standards so that some third-party chargers, if they're on the same standard, whatever one Apple's using, do actually work.
Some sort of frequency.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's a proprietary.
Oh, thing, yeah. Magnetic induction. It's
yeah,
totally.
But with an off, you know, with a charger for some other device that's still the same. I don't know if you call it a format or standard or whatever.
Yeah, probably a frequency.
It's really hard to get it lined up. You have to kind of get it, you know, in the exact right spot.
Right, right. So yeah, there's that. And finally, so Apple Pay is coming to the UK, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a pretty interesting story out there that says if you go to the wrong terminal, there may be a limit of £20.
Well, all terminals, actually.
No. Not all terminals.
Yes.
Based on my reading, it's not all terminals. It is only certain terminals that are out of date.
Nope.
Okay. Where do you get your information?
From Apple.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I could find you the page, but When they launch in the UK, there is a UK, this is a bank limit thing. This is not an Apple thing. It's a standards thing too. And you're right. It is based on the age of the terminal, but there are no new terminals in the UK right now that use this new standard. Let me find the article.
To accept Apple Pay for transactions over £20, your payment terminal must be capable and configured properly, and payment provider needs to support the latest network contactless specifications. Yes.
There's a support article. And maybe we can move on because I don't want to hold people up as I find the link and I can give you the nitty gritty details. But I read the whole thing and there's a certain fraud standard thing that they have to support before. And then it's still up to the retailer to opt in and then, change the settings on their terminal or what have you. But when Apple Pay launches in the UK, there is a £20 limit. It's the same as on their current NFC payments throughout the region using other platforms.
Yeah.
In the fall, that will go to £30. And then as retailers get the new machines that support this new protocol and standard, then the retailers can opt to have that limit waived or lifted or what have you. And the key is that with this new standard being in place, and the reason why they want it in place is liability shifts from the retailers and the credit card companies to the card issuing banks. So it's all about who has to pay if fraud ensues.
Hmm. Gotcha.
And so the limit's there to protect the people now from having to absorb more than that in fraud transactions.
Right. Well, NFC, I mean, compromised. There are, at least at, like, for example, at the Trader Joe's, it's really odd. Usually when I do the Apple Pay, it's just you dunk it and then it's done. But at Trader Joe's, they ask you more questions. Do you want to do credit or debit? And if you say credit, it's done. But if you say debit, then you...
Well, and I would assume if you say credit and it's over, you know, like they do at Whole Foods, if it's over, what was it, $100 or something like that, then they make you sign. There's a certain point, or was it?
I don't know. I think there is a PIN, though. I think you actually have to enter your PIN if you do a debit.
If you're doing debit, but I'm saying if you choose to do credit, cards, and it's over debit. A certain amount, I think they even flip over and make you sign.
But is that the, I mean, have you experienced, so I guess I should rewind and say, it does appear that the Apple Pay does support an additional layer of security via PIN.
Well, that's just it's flipping over and using it like a debit card, I guess, which is really annoying. I've not experienced that.
You haven't ever experienced it asking more questions?
Not for like a debit card PIN.
Well, I mean, at all.
No, so, I've had terminals ask additional questions, for sure. Okay. Like McDonald's every once in a while, it'll ask me if I want to use my Amex points to pay for the food rather than just the Amex itself.
Yeah, I always just say credit because I'm trying to save button presses and all that.
Yeah, I've never heard it with a debit actually asking you to then additionally enter your PIN. That's weird. But maybe that's
sure
the equivalent,
that
again, maybe that's the equivalent of it asking you to sign when you're over a certain minimum amount.
Maybe. I'll have to get back to you. I think I need to go to Trader Joe's tonight and get some food anyway, so I'll know tomorrow. Yeah, and that's it. You want to do a pick? Do you have a pick?
I do have a pick.
All right, let's hear it.
I hopefully didn't. Oh, of course, I moved away from it. My pick is a pair of not Beats headphones. They're Beats-like headphones. So I've been wanting a set of Bluetooth wireless headphones. And the Beats, you know, different people feel differently about them. I tried them on in the Apple Store, and I was okay. I thought they sounded pretty good to me, but I'm definitely not an audiophile. They're certainly very bassy and maybe don't have as much high-end as some other headphones. But I felt they were comfortable and lightweight, and I liked the style. And I thought, you know, I wouldn't mind maybe having a pair of, you know, Bluetooth wireless Beats headphones.
Mm-hmm.
Those could be cool.
Sure.
But I didn't want to pay $200.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Last week, I think it was last week, there came out this news story about, you know, the cost of Beats headphones and them being only like, you know, $20 to make. And there's this, you know, in terms of parts cost, not to make. I want to be clear. Did we talk about this last episode? I don't remember. This big story came out and somebody had, you know, done the, oh, it's $20 worth of components.
And then it turned out to be knockoffs.
Yeah, and then this week it came out, well, they actually analyzed a pair of cheap Chinese knockoffs, not the actual Beats headphones. But even still, you know, the components that go into a $200 pair of Beats is not $200. Probably not anywhere close. You know, that I believe.
Sure.
But that doesn't even matter. The point was I didn't want to pay $200 for Beats headphones. And because this story came out, somebody had mentioned on one of the podcast forums that I was in, they're like, hey, you know, Monoprice has headphones and they're really good. And I went over and they have and they're totally Beats knockoffs. They have a set of headphones. They're called the Bluetooth on-ear headphones with built-in microphone. They're simply just called that. Bluetooth on-ear headphones from Monoprice. And they are $48. And if you go look at them, I'll post the link for you. You know, they come in all the different colors, so white and black and green and yellow. I guess they don't have red. They don't have a pair of product red ones. And they come in awesome packaging, beautiful box, unboxing thing, a nice velvet bag. They fold up. And they sound great, and they're $48, not $200. And actually, I got mine, when I picked mine up, the white and the green color were on sale. So I think I actually got them for $35, $36.
And how do they sound?
They sound great. And I haven't had any issues so far. I've been using them for about a week. Haven't had any issues with Bluetooth dropouts. They seem to charge up pretty good. And I think they sound great. And they look and feel just like Beats. The build quality is close. It's not like the material when you take them out. You can definitely tell they're a little bit cheaper material, but they still have a nice weight to them. The joints where they fold are metal and they seem like they'd be good and strong. I mean, they click just like you'd want and expect them to kind of click into place. So everything's nice and solid. They don't feel at all to me flimsy. In any way. So I've been impressed. And, you know, Monoprice, that's kind of the thing they do, is they look at what's popular in the market and they figure out how to make the exact same thing, but cheaper. And I would say they did a pretty good job with these. And it has the controls. It has the big button on the side so you can stop and pause the music, or you can use it to activate Siri, because it does have a built-in microphone. And then it's got little volume rockers on the side. So, and you can program and set those up to, I think... Up and down, it's skip forward, so, skip back, and then so you these press and hold, it's volume up and volume down.
These are Bluetooth.
They're Bluetooth.
So it's $50 or $48, right, for Bluetooth on-the-ear headphones with built-in microphone.
Yeah.
Is the name.
Yeah, from Monoprice.
That's pretty killer.
And, I mean, they do. They look just like if you were walking down the street and you saw somebody with these on,
you would say, hey, this guy's wearing knockoff Beats.
I don't think so.
Because it doesn't have the giant B on the side.
No, it has an M.
Giant M.
It's a Monoprice logo.
Yeah, dope. But cool.
Yeah.
I wonder what... I should check out their Bluetooth headphones. Or their earphones, I should say.
Yeah. I don't know. I figured it was worth a shot at $50, you know? And I've been impressed.
Nice.
I think it was worth it. And I knew they made this kind of stuff, but I didn't even think about it. Somebody has told me their studio headphones are really good too. The premium over-the-ear DJ style over-the-ear pro headphones. Studio phones for $24.
Cool. Yeah, so let me see here. Yeah, $48.
Telling you, it's a deal.
That is a deal right there. Does it show the battery capacity in the status bar on your phone?
I don't know.
And is there a separate volume? So is volume on the side of the headphones? Does that?
Yep. And the volume, you can control the volume, and you can also do skip forward, skip back.
No. Are the volumes separate? So is there like a volume on your phone and a volume on your on your headphones, and you have to turn up your headphones all the way and then turn up your iPhone all the way. So it, so it's linked.
Yep.
So when you hit the button on your headphones, it actually turns up the little slider on your phone.
Yep. The UI comes on and the whole thing.
Nice. Okay. Yeah. That sounds like a quality driver in there too.
Yeah.
I really got to write up my, my headphone comparison thing. Cause I did a lot of research into that. So, but that sounds pretty good. $48.
Yeah. I mean, and again, I'm no audiophile. To me, it sounds like it has a similar profile to what I remember from when I tried on the Beats in the Apple Store. I mean, they are definitely very bassy and they don't have a lot on the high end, but I don't mind that. I like my music a little bit on the bassy side.
Yeah. Okay. Well, you're starting to break up, so I'll do my pick and hopefully you'll come back by the time I'm finished. And so my pick is iAliens. It's a Reddit application, and I would say, or I guess it's iAliens, but it shows up on the phone as iAlien. But if you search for iAlien, you'll get the wrong thing. So it's iAliens. It's a little rocket ship.
With an S?
Yes. It's plural aliens. And, yeah, it's just a really, really nice Reddit client. It's very clean, very simple. It's very easy to navigate around, get to your subreddits, get to, you know, front page, all page, liked and hidden. And I mean, just like all the stuff that you really care about. It's free. There is a remove ads option for $3, which is nice. I should probably do that. And, yeah, the only thing that it's not good at is viewing images, but honestly, for looking at anything but images, it's awesome. So it's actually a really good news viewer. And I mean, Alien Blue is great. Reddit owns it now, but I mean, anybody who's used Alien Blue knows that that interface is just bananas because it does everything. And because of that, it's just too convoluted to do a lot of things. So if you're looking for a chill, cut down, just kind of what you would want for casual Reddit browsing sort of thing, check out iAliens. It's nice. You can customize it different colors. And yeah, it's free. So why not? Adam, are you there? Is it working better now?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh. Is it you or me?
No, it's me. Something's happened to my send.
Okay. All right. Well, we're at the end of the show anyway, so that's not too bad. Of course, you can find all the iPhone picks and the show notes at theiosshow.com. You can review the show in iTunes, and we really appreciate that. Go in there, and if you haven't left a comment or a rating, please do that. That's awesome for us, and it helps other people find the show. And tell a friend. That's always nice, too. Of course, NatureBox at naturebox.com/tios. You'll get a free box of snacks. Just do it. It's free and it's snacks and it lets them know that you heard about them on the show. And that's really important. Advertising is handled by Backbeat Media, backbeatmedia.com. Adam Christensen is at the Maccast, maccast.com and at Maccast on Twitter. And are you still there?
Yeah, I was just being quiet because you can't hear me.
Okay, cool. Well, thank you for being here. And, even though we had the, you had your little thing in Colorado, right? Your little retreat?
You got to stop asking me questions because I got like massive packet loss. You're not gonna hear me.
That's why it's late because Adam and Jeff were at a retreat and now, but we're here. So, and it happened. So I'm at Michael Johnston on Twitter and I guess that's it. We'll talk to you next time on the iOS show.
Internet. How are we going to communicate this?
Stylus.
We don't want to carry around a mouse, right? So what are we going to do? Oh, a stylus, right?